Good morning, and I'd like to bring House Fisheries to order. It is approximately 10:05 on Tuesday, March 12th. President are Representative Olson, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Heron, Representative Feige, Representative Johnson, myself, Chair Seaton. Remind everybody about their cell phones. And today we're going to take up two bills. The first is going to be House Bill 110, Barbed Hooks. And the second will be House Bill 143, short-term crew member licenses. Our intention today is to take additional public testimony. We have some amendments to consider, but we are not planning on moving either of these bills at this meeting. And then we also, I just want to put on the record that the committee has considered a resolution requesting a lowering of Chinook salmon bycatch in the trawl fisheries in the Gulf and the Bering Sea, and so that will be brought forward as a committee resolution, and the committee members are willing to have that come forward as a committee bill. So let's go to, there's nothing from anyone to come forward at this time. We'll go to House Bill 110, Barbed Hooks, and the members should have on their desk a CS, and that CS, if you move the CS version in for adoption.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt CS for House Bill 110, version M, is that N? Yeah. N is in November. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Heron, and that was a motion. I'll object for discussion. The purpose of this CS is to move the place where House Bill 110 is located from 1610 to 1605. And the purpose of that amendment is to properly place this barbed hook restriction along with treble hooks and bait and other, so that violations would be the same as covered under the 1605 provisions for if somebody violates the provisions of it, it'd be the same like using a treble hook instead of when only a single hook is allowed. So that's basically a technical change, so we don't have to go in and put a whole new section of violations. Is there any questions or any discussion on CS? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. So we have before the committee version N. And we've been joined by Representative Gaddis. Welcome.
Thank you.
Where are those? Let's see. I guess. Where are those? And then. And we'll take a brief at ease while we get coordinated. At this time, we have an amendment that I'm going to offer, which is 28 LS 0360/N.1. And that'll be offered as amendment number one. And that on page one, following line 13 to the committee substitute that we have, it inserts a new subsection that reads, D, in this section, barbed hook means a hook with at least one subsidiary point facing in the opposite direction of the main point of the hook, barbed hook does not include a hook from which all barbs have been pinched down, filed off, or otherwise removed. And the purpose of this is to add a definition into the regulation. And since Ledge Legal drew this up as prohibiting the use of barbed hooks, we are not defining barbless hooks. We are defining a barbed hook, so that a barbless hook would be one that does not conform and does not have a subsidiary barb pointing in a different direction than the hook itself. So I'm offering this amendment. Representative Herring, you want to object for discussion?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I object.
So we have objection for discussion. Discussion on the definition of barbed hook. Representative Johnson, did you have a question or want some more discussion on that? Okay. Seeing none, Representative Herring.
I remove the objection.
Objection to amendment number one has been removed. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, we have adopted amendment number one. And I'm going to offer amendment number two, which is N.2. And this, again, is to the CSN version. And it's on page one, following line 13, as to insert a new subsection to read D in this subsection. One, freshwater means all inland water. Two, inland water means water separated from salt at the mouths of creeks and streams at a line between the extremities of the river's banks at the mean low tide at the point to be determined and adequately marked by the department.
Object.
So we have an objection for discussion. One of the questions on this bill was that we had talking about barbless hooks in certain fresh waters, and there wasn't a good definition of fresh water. So this gives us a definition, meaning inland waters and also the point at the department marks at the mouths of streams, which is a low water point. There further discussion on amendment number two?
I remove my objection.
Objections removed. Is there any further objection to amendment number two defining the term fresh water in the bill? Seeing none, amendment number two is adopted. At this time, are there any further amendments to come forward from the from anyone? I want to then, is there any further discussion at this point before I reopen public testimony? Seeing none, we will open public testimony again. If we had closed it, I can't. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 110, the CS, the amendments that were adopted, or any other portion of House Bill 110 at this time? I wanted to let the committee know that we do have Captain Burke Waldron from the Alaska Wildlife Troopers. Are you online, Captain Waldron?
They know I'm here.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am online.
Great. Did you have any questions or wish to offer any testimony on the amendments that have been adopted, or the definition of fresh water, or the definition of a barbed hook at this time?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the first I've heard of the amendment, so I was writing furiously trying to keep up with you. the first thing that comes to point, pun intended again, on the definition of barbed hook was, I think you said a subsidiary point pointing in the opposite direction. Opposite would mean, you know, 180 degrees opposite, and barbed hooks often are close to being perpendicular, so we might want to say something to the effect of a separate or different direction than the primary point. Am I making myself clear there?
You are, and
okay, good.
Thank you. We'll we'll consider that to make sure that we get that under consideration. Thank you. Is there any other questions? And we're not planning to move this bill today as well, so we can get the language exactly right. I hope that if you do have any further clarifications, get back to us before the next meeting, please. Did you have any other comments at this point in time? And we'll make sure that you get those amendments. I thought those had been transmitted to you.
I don't believe they have been transmitted to me. I'm still looking at my notes for your definition of inland waters or freshwater and inland waters and comparing it to the definitions that are already in place. I need to further evaluate that before I can comment.
Okay, that'll be fine, and we'll allow you to do that in the future as well.
Thank you.
Eric Jordan, are you online from Sitka?
Yes, I am. Hello, Chairman Seaton and members of the committee.
Good morning. Eric, would you identify yourself and who you represent for the record, please, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Eric Jordan. I'm a 63-year resident of Southeast Alaska. I represent myself. I am here to speak in favor of both proposals, speaking to House Bill 110 right now. I support the legislation and the amendments. I proposed years ago in the early 80s that treble hooks be banned in the Southeast Alaska troll fisheries, and they actually were for 1 year. And in the early 90s, I proposed that Southeast troll fishery be a barbless hook fishery. I have a long record of supporting conservation in freshwater as an avid sport fisherman, particularly for a steelhead. I do have a question for the committee, if that's appropriate, though. Why are you doing this instead of the Board of Fish?
Thank you, Eric. And the legislature, just to, you know, normally we don't do a lot of back and forth, but we don't have very many people testifying today. But just an explanation is the legislature has the ability to bring up issues, and that's what we do here. The Board of Fish can also take up issues. We'd be very happy if the Board of Fish would take up the issue and deal with a lowering mortality and unintended mortality. However, the legislature also has the responsibility to look out for the resources of the state, and so that's what we are doing at this point in time. So, and I
think... Mr.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I strongly support this. I think there's all kinds of records that barbless hooks result in less mortality, particularly when you're releasing a fish in freshwater. So I think this is altogether appropriate, conserved, saves fish. And at long time experience fishing barbless hooks, the retention of the fish is very similar to using a barbed hook. So I think this is a great idea, and want to go on record as supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Jordan on House Bill 110? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony on 110. We'll come back to you when we consider the other bill, Mr. Jordan. Thanks, Eric. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 110? Seeing none, I want to make sure that the committee is aware we received communication from United Fishermen of Alaska, and they submitted that in your packet, that they support the idea of reducing catch mortality. However, they wish the Board of Fish would do this instead of the legislature. We also have in our packets a a study that was suggested and written by or submitted to us by a member of the public, and that is by Alex Wertheimer, National Marine Fisheries Service, Northwest Alaska Fisheries Center, Auk Bay Lab, and this was in 1988, hooking mortality of Chinook salmon released by commercial trawlers. And in the abstract, the end is the recalculated estimate of total hooking mortality for legal and sublegal fish based on wound severity was 23.5%. So this committee has been working quite a bit trying to figure out how we would proceed with limiting all kinds of unintended mortality. We also have online Dan Dunaway, and members should have Mr. Dunaway's current comment in their packet. But Mr. Dunaway, would you like to testify in person?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome. Would you put yourself on the record and also who you're representing?
Yes, I'm Dan Dunaway. I'm speaking strictly for myself. I'm a resident of Dillingham and a lifelong Alaskan. Number one, I very much object to the legislature encroaching into the what I see as the realm of the Board of Fish. That's the whole reason we have a Board of Fish. One of the major reasons we became a state was to have more public involvement and to take it out of the political arena. I do understand what you said earlier, Mr. Chair, and I respect that. However, I think the Board of Fish is the appropriate place. Also, as you can see in my packet, I think particularly in sport fisheries and freshwater, numerous studies have a somewhat ambiguous result, but probably the best study of all is that Daniel Schill and Scarpella meta-analysis from 1997 that shows that you have a minimal biological gain for a significant social cost. There's many situations, no matter how carefully you try to define barbless, where there's a lot of inadvertent violations and a lot of squabbles that really alienate an otherwise supportive public. And I found some more studies of that recently that I have not forwarded, but at least in this sport fisheries, freshwater particularly, I'm not very well versed in saltwater fisheries, but I really don't think there's a significant gain. Idaho is in the process of trying to get rid of their barbless rules, and just in the last year or so, Montana considered this issue, one of the biggest sport fisheries in the lower 48, and they decided to not adopt barbless regulations. And I think that's enough. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, and we do have your comment in the packet in full. Does anyone have any question for Mr. Dunaway? Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anyone else online that would like to testify? Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify? So we will close public testimony at this time. Committee discussion. Representative Herron.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, and trying to understand this, I'd like to put a couple of questions on the table for the next time there's a hearing. So, Chinook salmon fisheries, I would say that we need to apply triage to several drainages. But is this like applying a Band-Aid to a very severe injury?
And that's a question for me.
To the chair, please.
Okay. As a sponsor of the bill, I just want to say that, you know, we are looking at all aspects of the Chinook salmon low stock returns that we have. you know, the committee has agreed to sponsor an amendment or a resolution requesting lowering of the trawl bycatch limits. I've sponsored this legislation because I don't think that we can just ask other people to take care of the problem. I mean, I think that we heard from a commercial salmon troller that they that some people in the commercial salmon troll industry say that the bycatch, the release of small or other fish and the wounds have a significant amount of mortality that's unintended. We are finding that the studies that we have from Washington and Oregon anyway, and now we've gotten a few other studies in, that the people that harvest fish on the rivers need to also look at, can they change their operations to, in a way, protect king salmon and make sure that we don't have unintended mortalities. And so that is the purpose of the bill. It's not to say that one solution will fix our problem. I think our problem is made up of many pieces, habitat. We've got interaction with other species such as pike in some areas. We've got unintended mortality in commercial fisheries. We've got many things, and we're trying to look at how can we deal with a pervasive problem by fixing a lot of little pieces instead of just saying somebody else is responsible and we're going to only segregate out their problems as if that's going to be the solution. So that's the end. My response as a sponsor of the bill to why this bill is forward. It's not intended to be the entire fix. It's intended to be taking care of one piece of many problems.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Herron.
Two more questions. Should the legislature get involved in this issue and reduce the number of catches and releases that a fisherman could do in a single day?
Representative Herron, that's a idea that I haven't put forward. It's an idea that another person may want to put forward. I know that there can be problems where there are, you know, when you take the mortality, that's one of the reasons why to reduce the mortality on a single catch, because many people are in some fisheries go out and they're not intending to take a lot of fish. What they're intending to do is have the recreational opportunity. When you take a recreational opportunity and multiply it times the mortality rate, then that mortality rate can be, even though it's small, it can be a significant component to the total mortality in the fishery. So it's an idea that would be worth discussing. It's not incorporated in this bill right now.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Herron.
One more question. Sure. Is, do you know the position, a two-part question, do you know the position of Board of Fish and the Department of Fish and Game on this proposed legislation?
The ADF&G is here, and they can come forward and testify if you'd like them to. I don't want to try to characterize anyone else's position on the bill that hasn't come forward, and we have plenty of opportunity for public testimony if the department wants to come forward and testify again to make clear. We will.
Yes.
Certainly invite them.
Yes, sir.
I also have a question I'd like to ask the department.
Okay. Would the Department of Fish and Game come forward? I think you've probably heard the question. If not, we can have it repeated. And would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed? Thank you for being at our hearing.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Charlie Swanton. I'm the director for the Division of Sport Fish, Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I did hear the question, and I would maintain that we're neutral with regards to this particular piece of legislation. We do feel that, you know, the Board of Fisheries and their vested authorities or certainly have in the past dealt with this particular issue. As Mr. Dunaway referenced, there's quite a bit of public input with regards to these sorts of issues in the Board of Fisheries. So that would be the answer to that particular question, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Herron, follow up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Charlie, does the Board of Fish take positions on any kind of legislation similar to this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Herron, you know, trying to go back and to recall my memory, I don't recall that they have in the past. So it might be worthwhile to ask somebody else that question in terms of, but my recollection is, at least in the more recent past, I would say that they have not taken a position on a piece of legislation, Mr. Chairman.
So just for clarification, Mr.
Representative Herron.
Is generally silent or neutral?
That would probably be my guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I could answer
go ahead.
One question that Representative Herron had, and that is that in certain fisheries around the state that potentially have an issue with regards to mortality, we can and we have restricted, such as in a particular fishery where after somebody completes their bag limit for the day, then they're done fishing. So that is an option that we have exercised, or that it is exercised in certain fisheries, as well as prohibition of removal of the fish from the water, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Johnson, did you have a question?
Thank you. Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Good to see you again, Charlie. How would you define significant probability in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, do you want a statistical?
How would you do it? Would it be 1 out of 10 if you know, is it 1 out of 20, 1 out of 100 if you catch any? What is significant probability? I mean, how would you define it? Would you do it to regulation, so it'd have to be some kind of firm number.
I think it's as it's referenced in the legislation, it would be a discussion with the department and the Board of Fisheries with regards to that, what we would constitute significant probability. It's one that I've thought a fair amount about, in that I'm not real clear on a simple answer to that. I mean, significant would constitute something greater than 50%, certainly. In other words, it would have a greater than 50%, but depending upon the situation, it could be as high as, you know, significant probability would be 90% or 95%.
If I could follow up.
Representative Johnson.
So if you're, let's say you're fishing for silvers in a stream where Chinook are a stock of concern, wouldn't one fish be a significant probability if you catch one fish out of there? So would it vary by stream, or would it be across the board, or would it vary on the management type of the how are you going to designate that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I think that you pretty much hit the nail right on the head. It would be situation by situation. In terms of contrasting where we're at with regards to the Chinook salmon escapement goal and those sorts of things, and what other species would be involved. So it's a little bit more complex than just a simple answer, but if necessity, you know, dictated, we would go through the exercise.
And can I ask?
Sure.
Chairman. And I would like to ask a question. The way this is written in B, where it says a person may not use a barbed hook when participating in freshwater fisheries in which more than one species is present, if there is a significant probability of catching the species that may not be retained under regulation of the Board of Fish. So Do you read this that there the significant probability is the determiner, or is the Board of Fish going to have to determine, first of all, there's got to be a significant probability, and then the Board of Fish still has to decide whether that's going to be something they're going to require or not?
Mr. Chairman, I would say that your assessment is correct, that it would be a conversation with the Board of Fisheries.
Right. So this isn't an absolute number that is, oh, if this happens, then this shall happen. It's a may, you know, if there's a significant probability, then the Board of Fish may determine that you have to use barbed hooks, barbless hooks. So I just wanted to clarify that that's the intention of the structure here, not to put down a number and say if there's one interaction or 10 interactions, but that under the condition that the Board of Fish determines that there's going to be a significant probability, they may or they may not make that requirement. But Representative Johnson, I just wanted to get a clarification. And
Mr. Chairman, I may disagree with your reading, because this says may not be retained under the regulation. So they set up a regulation saying king salmon cannot be retained. Then if you're fishing for silvers and you have to use a barbless hook, if they put X number, if they determine that whatever that X is significantly a significant probability, then you'd have to use barbless hooks for silvers if they're kings present in the river. And that significant probability is what is set. The board is only retaining the regulation. I mean, they set the regulation that you can't keep kings in this river, period. Then what is significant is determined, and that's the number. So I read it slightly differently than you do, and, boy, that's always a concern.
Okay, thank you.
Two interpretations between two legislators. You get three of us in the room, we got problems.
And that's and under committee discussion, that's why we're not attempting to move the
right.
bill so that we can get the wording correct, because the intention is, like in C, whether there is a significant probability of catching a species that may not be retained may be determined by the Board of Fish or by emergency order by the commissioner. So that determination is not being made in the statute as to whether that there's that significant probability. It's going to be made by the Board of Fish. But if we need to clarify that, I'm perfectly willing to make that clarification.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I understand that the board will determine that it is you need to do something. But someone's going to have to decide what a significant probability of that is. And is that if it's one fish, or once again, is it one out of 10 casts, which I'd be happy with catching anything in one out of 10 casts myself, but is it, you know, if you land three fish and one of them's a king, if you're done? You got a barbless hook for everyone. I mean, I just don't understand how this could be managed from a stream side, or I guess bait, no bait. We do that all the time with notification. So I guess it would be too tough. I just don't know what that means. So that's my first question.
Yep. Proceed on the second question, Representative Johnson.
And you brought us something very interesting when you said that the commercial guys had significant, mortality. They're not using barbless hooks, are they?
There was a proposal that Eric Jordan made in the past to go to barbless hooks in the commercial fishery, and that has not been adopted. As far as I know, I mean, I haven't heard that, but that was a proposal by Mr. Jordan. That was his testimony. I haven't seen the proposal.
So we could easily adopt this to just if we took out fresh water, participating in a fishery in which more than one species is present. We could take care of the barbless hooks for both freshwater and saltwater, couldn't we?
We could change for both salt and freshwater, recreational and marine and commercial. We could do, I mean.
Just checking.
Sure, and Representative Johnson, just to be clear, I mean, we did have a 58-foot limit imposed limit seiners that was imposed by the legislature. So there has been legislative actions in the past that have said what gear can be used or what is prohibited.
Mr. Chairman, I think we started this debate with I delight in gear type discussions.
Yes, yes, and amendments are available. Mr. Swanton, did you have any further clarifications you might like to help us make? Or,
Mr. Chairman, I guess one that I would make is that in certain fisheries around the state that are high use and low retention or catch and release, certainly in Bristol Bay, where this last discussion was had in January with regards to a barbless regulation, a large number of the guiding operations, lodges and so forth, they require their guides and their clients to use barbless hooks voluntarily. And I know that there's other areas around the state where there are, you know, those sorts of provisions that a lodge or a guide will instruct their clients that we are using barbless hooks as a means with which to do it voluntarily. So I wanted to make that point of clarity. And the other thing is that from the last meeting, I made a statement that you seemed to be a little bit surprised. And what I was getting at there was the difference between a barbed and a barbless hook, as Mr. Dunaway referenced, that there's not a lot of difference potentially in terms of low percentages, in terms of mortality associated with one versus the other. And what I wanted to just clarify was that that statement was that when we're the measuring sticks that we use for management of our fisheries and whatnot are not refined enough to discern the difference between 3% and 2% mortality. So you're down to 1% of a very low number. So that's what I was referencing, is that when we were faced with a situation like that in terms of very, very low percentages and very low numbers of fish, that we as a department would probably just close the fishery rather than, you know, then shoulder the risk of trying to deal with small percentages. Hopefully that's clear. But
yeah, thank you. And, you know, some of the data that we were going from was the 3.5% reduction from about an 8% reduction. So it's about half, not 1%. And if that's from the Washington and Oregon studies. And so, you know, our problem here, just for as committee discussion, is that king salmon has gotten to be such a problem for Cook Inlet, for the Matsu, for the Kenai, for Western Alaska, for so many areas of the state, that we've convened gap analysis the governor's trying to put in $10 million this year and two more years of $10 million to address this problem. And the question is, how do we address the problem, and how can we get to some of the solutions, and can we just wait on research, or do we need to start addressing unintended mortality? And so I appreciate that clarification, and it's going to be difficult when we have a number of different studies, some that say we have a lot of mortality that's unintended, multiple catch of the same fish. We don't want to limit it. We want to expand, if we can, the recreational opportunities for those fish. But how do we do that? So I'm very encouraged that there are a number of guides and sport fishing lodges and all that require people to use barbless hooks. And that should tell us something as well, that people that are being, especially the guides and that are taking recreational fishermen, many of them are addressing this issue because they've seen it on the ground that there's a difference between how much you have to tire out a fish to get alongside and remove a barbed hook versus allowing that fish to not be totally tired out, slacking up the line, letting that trophy fish escape with less harm. And so I'm very pleased that a number of people have come forward with that. Like I said, that this bill was stimulated by people that were fly fishing on the Kenai River and said they don't know why people don't all pin their barbs, because they do, because it's just something that they see on the ground as something that is very beneficial and less harmful to the fish. So that's what stimulated this bill. and I appreciate your clarification on that from the department. Representative Gaddis had a question.
Well, and before you go, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, and to piggyback on your last comment, but I do have a question for you, so, too, if you don't mind. I would differ to a certain degree in regards to fishing guides using barbless hooks and catch and release. I know that many of the lodges, that's the experience that they sell, not necessarily putting food in the freezer. So I do think that they come from a different area, and their folks a lot of times come from the lower 48, and I think that their experience that they're selling and the pictures that they're selling are far different than filling the freezer. So I think that they come from different spots. So, you know, I might argue with you in regards to their, you know, looking at necessarily saving the fish. You know, their job is they come from different spots. Different question for you, and that is in regards to the fiscal note. I find I'm sitting here listening to the conversation as we talk about, you know, what stream and how do we know what's in what stream, what we're catching, and I have a difficult time thinking that if we institute this barbless hook, so now we've added another dimension to our fishery, and that it would cost nothing. And I guess I'm sitting here listening and how and when, and I'm thinking, you know what, there is no way barbless hooks that I'm even going to fish. I mean, I'm a fisher for filling the freezer. I'm not a fisher for catch and release. So how do you get a zero fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gaddis, the way we were looking at this is that the Board of Fisheries goes on a three-year cycle, and within that three-year cycle, they visit various aspects or various areas of the state, and within that process, each one of the fisheries that are in that area come up, and we are obligated as a department to bring data, to bring, you know, participation statistics, so on and so forth, and that would be one way of going about it. The other one would be to bring this in front of the Board of Fisheries at a statewide meeting, of which they are held every year for statewide related issues, and deal with it once and for all on a statewide type basis. So those are the two avenues, and we you know, spend upwards of 40 to 45 days a year in regulatory meetings, meeting with the Board of Fisheries on these sorts of issues. So that's and we're required, you know, to interact with the board, and that's how we would go about our business, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gaddis.
So a quick follow-up is you'd just be spread thinner. I mean, if you have one more duty to do and it won't cost you any more, clearly something's going to be spread thinner.
Depending upon when those meetings are held and the comprehensiveness of those, there would be a fair amount more work within that regulatory meeting. So that would be you know, focused on those things. I don't know if spread thinner is probably the right description as much as a little bit more focus on those particular fisheries issues. Depending upon what other fisheries issues were in front of us at that point in time, it could be a fairly labor-intensive meeting. But spread thin.
Representative Gaddis.
You may have not, and I may have not voiced it well. In regards to the fiscal note, I guess I was speaking in regards to enforcement versus meetings.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gaddis, I believe that Representative Waldron is on the phone, and he could speak to the enforcement aspect.
And so,
do you want to go there?
Yeah, but that's fine. I'm just trying to figure out. I just want to make sure we clarify the question. So the question is, you know, you could have you have other hooks. I mean, you have other regulations such as baited or unbaited or those things. So are you, is your question is if there was a barbless regulation when they're making their regular inspections. It would cost them more to look at gear for bait versus non-bait or treble hook versus single hook, or whether they would have to do more enforcement if this particular gear regulation was in place.
I think all of the above.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Waldron, are you online there? Captain Waldron, are you still?
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh, good. Did you hear the question?
I think I did hear the question. I think I can answer it, Mr. Chair, Representative Gaddis. At this time, public safety's fiscal note is indeterminate, in part for several of the reasons that you brought forward here. A lot of factors weigh in until the language is closer to being finished, we can't determine what, if any, fiscal impact there will be on the department.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much for that. Are there further questions for Fish and Game at this time? Thank you, Charlie, for coming forward. Is there further committee discussion? Seeing none, I think what we'll do is we'll set this bill aside, and if there is, but I do want to let folks that are listening know if there are further studies they have on mortalities that might influence or let us know more about the effects of this bill. The committee is open to receiving those, so you can send those by email or fax. And thank you. So we'll put this bill aside, and now we are on House Bill 143, which is short-term commercial fishing license. And let's take just a brief at ease. Okay, we now have House Bill 143, temporary, all right, let's take a brief at ease. For us, House Bill 143, I am the sponsor of that bill, and we have my intern to present the bill. Would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed to introduce the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and the committee. For the record, my name is Douglas Duncan, staff and intern for Rep. Seaton. House Bill 143 deals with temporary commercial crew member licenses here in Alaska. It's currently possible to obtain one of these licenses for $30. To allow you to work as a crew member in a commercial fishery here in Alaska. And this program was started in 2005 as a way to provide possible tourism operations on commercial fishing boats, let someone bring them on and give them part of the Alaskan experience, and also as a way to let family members or friends legally work on the boat for a short time and just give them that experience and introduce them to Alaskan commercial fishing. However, in recent years, there's been an increasing trend of people buying multiple temporary licenses instead of an annual license due to the length of certain commercial fisheries are relatively short. So they've found that it's cheaper to buy multiple $30 licenses instead of one annual $200 license. And this is resulting in reduced revenue to the state as well as the Fisherman's Fund, because 39% of the sale of each license goes to the Fisherman's Fund. And there's projections that losses in revenue to both the state and Fisherman's Fund have totaled roughly $285,000 since this program was implemented in 2005, just due to multiple purchases. So what HB 143 would do would increase the cost of one of these 7-day licenses to $60, up from $30. And this is a way to dissuade people from purchasing more to get around purchasing an annual license. And it's done this way because with the paper licensing program that is in existence now, there's no way to effectively limit it to just one person or one temporary license per person per year. So this is a way to stop the exploitation of the program while still maintaining less expensive fishing opportunities for tourists and family members and actual temporary crew members.
Thank you. Are there questions for the sponsor's staff? We had a presentation by this. You have from the department and the Department of Labor about the effects of that, and those are the charts that are included with the bill. Seeing no questions, let's go to public testimony. We'll open public testimony. And we have, again, in Sitka, Eric Jordan. Are you online?
Yes, I am, Chairman Seaton.
Good morning, or yes, it's still morning. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record again, and then go ahead with your testimony?
Chairman Seaton, committee members, I'm Eric Jordan, a 63-year Southeast resident and commercial and sport and subsistence fisherman. I have two comments. Briefly, after listening to all the comments on 110, I'd just like to say that I believe the details of that are best left to the Board of Fisheries, and I speak from having been a member of the Board of Fisheries and involved in making many proposals. I believe that a resolution from the legislative communicating their concern over King Salmon conservation and recommending that the Board of Fish do whatever necessary to help conserve this precious resource, including consideration of barbless hooks, limiting catch and release, spawning sanctuary establishment would be helpful. So that's my comment on that after hearing all your discussion on that. Second, on 143, I support this. And having read it, it deals effectively with some of the problems that we have. One, I think, but I suggest amending it. One, I believe leaving the resident 7-day crew member fishing license at 30 would be appropriate. I think the problem we're seeing is non-residents coming in and buying a much cheaper 30-day license multiple times instead of buying a $200 non-resident commercial license for the crew member license for the season. I would amend this to separate the residents and non-residents, leave the resident fee for a 7-day crew member at 30, and add a section for the non-resident crew members at 100. And also to point out that your line there, just so you know the consequences, is that a person buying a 7-day crew member license will not be able to engage in fishing with a rod and reel. For example, in the Southeast Alaska, we have hand troll fisheries that are conducted with rod and reels. So somebody that wanted to do that, and we actually have quite a few charter guides that also have hand troll licenses. Right now, it costs $55 for a non-resident 7-day sport fish license and a $30 king salmon tag stamp. So they would still save $15 by buying a $100. I mean, it would cost them only $15 more to buy a $100 crew member license and then fish with rod and reels. This legislation, this sentence here in lines 7 and 8, eliminates that possibility. So, with emphasis on retaining that, amending the bill so that the residents still pay 30, but non-residents pay 100, I support it wholeheartedly and thank the committee for taking this up and addressing a couple problems we have.
Okay, are there questions? I guess, Eric, I had one question on the, I didn't quite follow the may not engage in the fishing with rod and reel. Does the $100 fee that you're proposing take care of that? Because the $100 would be more than the 55 plus the 30 king stamp. So I guess I just didn't understand.
No, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Yes, go ahead, Eric.
My understanding of the way this reads, if you buy a 7-day crew member license instead of a full-year crew member license, then you are foregoing the opportunity to fish with a rod and reel while you are on that commercial fishing vessel with a 7-day crew member license. Maybe enforcement could speak to that, but that's the way I see that. Which means that if you wanted to hand troll with sport rods, you would have to buy a $200 crew member license, or if you were a resident, a full year license. That this loophole where people are buying this short term license, crew member license, would be eliminated. And so I like that part of the legislation.
Okay, thank you. Are there further questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Eric. Jim Herbert or James Herbert, are you online?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, good morning, committee members. My name is Jim Herbert. 423rd Avenue, Seward, Alaska. Been a commercial fisherman and a mariner in Alaska since 1971. Currently serve on the Fisherman's Fund, but I want to be clear that I'm speaking on behalf of myself today, not representing the Fisherman's Fund, okay?
That's fine. Go ahead, then.
My comments start with three questions. With a bill like this, we always have to ask, what's the purpose of the 7-day license? Who benefits? And lastly, what is fair? I think as the sponsor's staff suggested, Representative Carl Moses introduced this concept in the legislature in 2004, and it went into effect in 2005 when commercial fishing, especially in his district in western Alaska, was having a difficult financial time, and he thought that this would encourage what he termed dude fishing, tourist interest in commercial fishing. I don't think he necessarily thought about all the implications of the Coast Guard license and liability and insurance that's associated with it, but that doesn't matter at this point. What the data shows, and I think at least I've been able to download some information about the rapid increase in the number of non-resident 7-day crew licenses over the years since this has been in effect. The numbers are currently for 2012, 2,317 non-resident 7-day licenses were issued, compared to 443 resident 7-day licenses. Actually, the number of resident licenses has dropped from 2010 and 2011. There were less issued, but there's still a large number, an increasing number of non-resident licenses. Fish and Game hasn't necessarily broken these out by district, but I'll bet you that most of these are probably from Bristol Bay and possibly Cook Inlet, where some of the seasons are short and intense, and the loopholes to buy multiple 7-day non-resident licenses winds up being a cheaper way to go than buying one $200 non-resident year-long license. I saw the fiscal note that was produced for your committee, and I do want to take exception. They show that there's potentially an increase of $73,000 by changing the cost of this 7-day license, but they only looked at licenses that had been issued 4, 5, and 6 times to the same individual. And I venture to say that many of these more than 2,000 non-resident 7-day licenses were issued 2 and 3 times. I know it's a tedious process to get that data, but I think you would find that the revenue that accrues to the state is appreciably more than $73,000 if you change this dollar amount. I do admit that this does serve a purpose. There are times when a person wants to have a temporary crew member for one trip to fill in for a peak of the season in Bristol Bay or Cook Inlet, for example. So I don't necessarily see eliminating the 7-day license, but what I want to see is a fair allocation. And I think Alaska residents are the ones that should benefit, and non-residents should be fairly assessed for their participation in commercial fishing. I'll remind folks what Mr. Jordan just said, that a resident annual sport fishing license costs $24. A 7-day non-resident sport fishing license is $55, roughly twice the amount. So there's some guidance that's already in statute and regulations. I also just want to make comment about Fisherman's Fund. Some of you are aware that the limit for claims to Fisherman's Fund are now at $10,000. We all are aware of how much the cost of medical treatment has increased in recent years. Formerly, that limit was at $2,500 at Fisherman's Fund, and this definitely accommodates much more severe injuries, helps people out who don't have insurance. Fisherman's Fund gets that 39% of the sale of each license from commercial deckhands and from the sale of permits. And I do think that with this increase in the number of non-resident 7-day permits, we will see a decrease in revenues, and potentially, too, the out-of-state residents may be, I'm not saying they are, but may be less experienced and more inclined to suffer injuries, which would put more of a burden on Fisherman's Fund. I think overall, the issue of fairness and who benefits are the things that I would base my comments on. I am in favor of this law. I think it's a good thing, and I hope that as it moves through the process, you will fine-tune it, and definitely it has my endorsement. I'm happy to take any questions, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Thank you, Jim, and Representative Herron has a question.
Yes. Mr. Herbert, instead of changing the dollar amount for the license, why wouldn't we just limit the number of consecutive licenses to, say, 2?
I think that might be difficult because most of these licenses are purchased at vendors in individual towns. And if I bought one at one shop in Dillingham, I can put whatever dates I want on that. At the time of sale, you enter the 7-day period you intend to use it. And then I could walk down the street and get a second or third one at another vendor. I think it would be very difficult to track those because the main sales are through vendors in season, and Fish and Game doesn't get those books sometimes until well into the fall. It would be very difficult, I think, to enforce that provision.
Thank you for putting that on the record.
And Representative Kreis-Tompkins.
To respond to your question, Representative Herron, we looked into it too, and it's just not logistically feasible, but it's a great idea.
Are there any further questions for Mr. Herbert? Thank you for your testimony, and we have, do we have anyone in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 143 at this time? Is there anyone?
No.
Oh, there's someone else online. Would you go ahead and identify yourself? Maybe it was a technical. Is there anyone else online that would like to testify on House Bill 143? Hearing none and seeing no one in the room, we do have Department of Labor is available for questions, and we have the ADF&G that's available to answer questions. Does anyone have any questions on this for either Department of Labor or Fish and Game? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony at this time. Committee discussion. Under committee discussion, you have an amendment that's, oops, here it's coming around. I'll wait until they're passed out. Members can, pretty short amendment. This is, and so I would move amendment number one, which is 28 LS 0520/A.1 as amendment number one. And do you object for discussion?
Object for discussion.
Thank you, Representative Herron. And this amendment, I'll read it. Page 1, line 1, following licenses, we're inserting and providing for an effective date. And then on page 1, following line 10, insert a new bill section to read, Section 2, this act takes effect January 1, 2014. And under discussion, the reason for this is the department said that they would be issuing their books, and if it was had a 90-day effective date, the books would be issued, and then there could be a change in fee. And so just for administrative convenience, that January 1st of next year would make sense. So under further committee discussion for an effective date of January 1st, seeing none, Representative Herron?
I remove my objection.
Objection removed, and we've adopted Amendment 1. Are there further questions? Are there further? Yes, Representative Christ-Tompkins.
I'm not sure quite how to go about this, but I'd like to at least offer an idea for an amendment, and that is it sets the license fee across the board at $60 for residents and non-residents, and I'd like to propose the idea of keeping the price at $30 for residents and set it at $60 for non-residents, and the rationale being that residents aren't gaming the system right now to get these multiple permits instead of getting a year-long commercial fishing license. So we're still addressing the problem of non-residents gaming the system, and it just keeps the price low if you've got a family member in-state who wants to go out in the boat without paying. I mean, if we set it at $60, that's what the year-long resident commercial fishing license is, and so the seven-day permit or the seven-day license really has no purpose, and if we keep it at $30, it'll still offer a discount if there's a sort of a family member filling in or something of that sort.
Okay, thank you. Are there discussions on that? Would Department Fish and Game come up? And would you introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game.
And Mr. Brooks, you just heard a suggestion. Would the department have any comment or is that within, would you first of all just give the department's feeling if you think that there would be any on that suggestion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, the topic came up this morning, speaking with staff, to Representative Chris Tompkins. You know, currently, and it forced us to go back and look at the statutes, because currently for the annual non-resident, it basically doesn't distinguish. It sets a fee for our annual crew license, and then there's a differential applied to the annual non-resident license based on the Carlson case. So currently that differential is $140. So it's $60 for an annual resident, $200 for an annual non-resident. And I think we've gone to that structure of licensing since some of the repercussions of that Carlson case came to fore. And I'm speculating, I haven't gone back and looked at the original bill, but I'm guessing that's why they put both the resident and non-resident at the same fee, because it gets you into different construct problems with a bill to try and specify what the differential would be. So if currently it's 140, we just have this, and it calls for a three-year review of that, and the new differential that will go into effect next year is going to be 190. So our non-resident annual license is going to go up to 250 next year. So it'll be 60 for a resident and 250 for a non-resident. And you're going to have this problem of the price point will change every 3 years when we go back and recalculate the differential that we can apply on that annual license. So it kind of just got us thinking an hour before the hearing on how would you do this. And but I think there's some the comments made about having a lower price fee for the residents is valid, because we saw, I think, only 17 of those two-day, or where people bought a second week-long license, because the price point, as soon as you bought two, you're at the cost of an annual license, and there's no incentive to buy any more of those. So long-winded answer, but I think there's probably some merit to figuring that out, but I think it would take a little bit of work to, you know, one approach I was looking at is if you had a seven-day license that was half of the annual fee, whatever that fee was, if it was half of it, then by the time you bought two of them, it would always follow any price increases. But I think it would require some review by Ledge Legal and to see what would work and come up with something.
Thank you, Representative Grace Tompkins.
I didn't appreciate that the prices of a non-resident license is going up to 250, and that's subject to this sort of triennial review. I wonder if, yeah, what you suggested makes sense. Maybe not half the price, but a third the price or something, so that, but something that's pegged to that changing price point.
So, and right now, this is how we did through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins. Thank you. You know, we looked at where that price point, because, and that was the assumption we made on our fiscal note, is where does the price change the behavior of the buyer? And currently at $30, you'd buy six of them. Before you bought that seventh one, you would, if you're thinking ahead, you'd buy an annual. And at the new fee, if it was 60, you'd buy three. And before you bought that fourth one, you would, if you were thinking ahead, you would buy an annual license instead of buying that. And that's why our analysis focused on the fourth, fifth, and sixth licenses, because those would be the ones that we would expect to change. We did apply the new fee, and in response to one of the testifiers, we applied that new fee to every license bought, but then we made some assumptions on how many people would buy an annual versus continuing to buy these weekly licenses. So I think upon further review, we would stand by our analysis in the fiscal note. Obviously, that would change if we go in and change prices that we're talking about now. We would revise that fiscal note.
Okay, thank you. Are there further committee thoughts or discussion on a differential between non-resident and resident? It would be, should be, does the committee feel we should investigate this further so that there is a lower resident but we do want to have Fish and Game make that calculation based on Carlson, because we're not wanting to go forward with something that's not workable. If the committee wants to have a differential between resident and non-resident. Representative Gaddis.
Well, I'd just like to make a comment. I do think that there should be a difference between resident and non-resident. That being said, I wanted to make a comment just on my past experience, and what I've seen is the seven-day licenses are not always gamed, if you will. I mean, there is a certain amount of people that come down and they're going to fish 7 days, and because the season runs longer, because there are more fish, because they got on a different boat, because they're doing something different. So, I mean, certainly there is, you know, smart folks do figure out the gaming if that's what they were going to do. I'm not going to discount that. But there are a few people that it does, that it's not part of being a game. So I just wanted to add that if you're going to, you know, look at everything, my comments.
Sure. And we did have two proposals. We had a proposal from the public talking about $30 and $100 for a non-res, because the $55 plus the $30, that was the $55 non-resident sport license plus the $30 king salmon with rod and reel was some interaction there. I'm still not quite sure about that, but does the committee want agreeable to going forward and analyzing this for non-res and resident fees? I'm seeing general agreement. Is there? Okay. So what we'll do is we'll ask the department to look at that differential and see what wording would make it work the best, and that would be following that general consensus of differential for non-resident and resident, and whether it's half the fees, which is what, you know, the Eric Jordan from Sitka basically was talking about, a resident commercial fishing license is $60 currently, and that was suggested as 30, and it's non-res is currently 200, and this would be half of that, which would be 100, or whether it's a 30 and $60 difference. Will hopefully the department will get back to us with some analysis on that and how that works. Is there any other questions for Fish and Game? Seeing none, is there any other comments from the committee? Then it is 10:25. Thanks for everybody's participation. We'll be adjourned.